All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Ronnie. I'm an alcoholic. Real happy to be here. And I appreciate you saying that about me because that's really the type of person I want to always be. Because, you know, I go to meetings. I go to a lot of meetings today. And I listen to people with long-term sobriety and people that are just getting started in sobriety. And I learn something from every one of them. Every meeting I go to, it seems like I pick up just a little bit of something that I can use in my life. And I hope I'll always stay that way. I sometimes run into people that have long sobriety that act like they know everything, you know. And that's a good reminder for me because I don't want to ever get like that. I grew up in West. I guess a lot of you maybe know where West is. If you lived in a dry county close around there, I know you did because I remember back when people from Hillsborough used to come buy their beer in West, you know, because Hill County was a dry county. And one thing I always noticed about those people is they really didn't know how to drink like we did in West. Of course, in West, you know, I always say, if you're an alcoholic, I guarantee you, West is a perfect town to grow up in. Because they teach you how to drink, you know, right from the get-go. I know when I was just a little kid, my dad used to give me sips of his beer. You know, on Saturday night, we'd go out to the family bar, cafe, you know. Friendship Cafe. It was like a family bar, and that was normal. You know, my dad would sit with the men and sit there at the bar and drink beer, and they usually talking about hunting or something like that. You know, and my mother, she'd be sitting over here with the women, and I don't remember exactly what they used to talk about, but I always thought the women's conversation was a little more interesting than the men's. You know, so. Anyway, somewhere along in there, you know, I'll tell you, in West, if there's a funeral, if there's a wedding, graduation, first communion, whatever it might be, they always had keg beer. And if you were big enough to fill up your cup, you could have all you wanted. And so, at a very young age, I started drinking. I really enjoyed going to those weddings. And I'm not really sure when I became an alcoholic, but I guarantee you it was at a young age, because by the time I was 12, I had a blackout one Christmas over at my grandmother's house. And the next morning, you know, my aunt was telling me about how crazy I was acting that night. And, you know, I didn't want to let on. You know, I don't know about you guys, but when you have a blackout, you know, you don't want other people to know that you're really in a blackout and out of control. You know, I want them to think, yeah, well, you know, I did that intentionally, you know. But, you know, I'd think to myself, I'd think, man, you know, did I really do that? Did I really say that? I believe I was a typical alcoholic because there are times I was shy, you know. But now, whenever I drank, you know, I was just sociable as I could be. And I didn't care if I knew you or not. I'd strike up a conversation with you or whatever. Well, my alcoholism, it did progress. And even at a young age, going through high school, I was one of the big parties. And we'd go out drinking, raise hell, and you know, West is one of those towns where you could get by with it there. My mother told me when I was a little kid, you know, she said, those people are Baptists. They don't drink. We're Catholics. We drink. We don't mess around with them people, you know. I remember thinking, well, you know, that makes sense to me, yeah. So, anyway, went all through school, and, you know, to this day I can't understand how my senior year I was elected Mr. West High in 1969. And I remember thinking, man, I'm really putting on a good front here, you know. It's kind of like the big book says, an alcoholic likes to enjoy a certain reputation that he knows in his heart he doesn't deserve. That was me. So it wasn't long after I got out of school that I got married. And it was one of those quickie deals, you know. Getting married, baby's on the way. Just had to kind of do that one day at a time. So anyway, we got married, and one good thing about that was I could drink anytime I wanted to. Because all of a sudden I wasn't living with my parents anymore, and I was the man of the house. And I thought I would probably get a job over at General Tire, and like my dad, and work there the rest of my life. Stop off at the bar every day after I get off work, and everything would be cool. You know, one thing about it, drinking is a very entertaining thing for us. We're real easy to please. You know, I have a friend right now, he's been trying like hell to sober up, and he did get a month, but now he's back drinking, you know, but he works like hell, but then he, entertain himself, he drinks. He doesn't know how to do anything else. So we're still praying for him. We hadn't given up on him. So anyway, that's what I did. Although I didn't get on over at General Tire because they said I had a defect in my back. And so I got to work in this mobile home company. I don't know if any of you guys ever worked at a mobile home company, but hey, that's a drinking, drugging paradise there now, let me tell you. Because every day at noon, everybody's out in the parking lot trying to chug a lug one of them 16s, you know, or 24s, I guess is what they call them. So that worked out great. And, you know, of course, stopping at the bar on the way home. Well, my wife, at that time, she didn't think it was so cool, you know. She started really getting tired of that. And, of course, my drinking progressed. I did crazy, insane thinking things when I drank. I was totally unpredictable. You know, the big book talks about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I never knew who was going to show up. You know, I think Willie Nelson wrote a song, Remember the Good Times, few in number and further in between. And that's me. You know, there are a few times that I did really good, you know, and partied down and just had a blast. And you know, I was the life of the party. But, man, I'll tell you what. You know, that last year of drinking, I didn't even get to invite to any New Year's Eve parties. So, and I knew why, you know. So anyway, I got home one night after one of those blackout drunks, and by then I was on probation for DWI, and luckily that my father-in-law came and drove me out of the bar that night. I went out the back door while the cops were coming in the front door to arrest me. Well, I woke up that next morning, and my wife at that time says, get dressed and I'm going to take you to work. And I'm thinking, well, all right, you know. And so I'm getting dressed and I'm trying to think what's going on, you know. Because for one thing, we've got two cars. And she's never taken me to work before. And I don't have no idea what happened the night before. And she is really pissed off. So I'm getting dressed, and I said, well, what are you planning on leaving? You know, I took it out that much. She said, yeah, I'm leaving. I can't take this anymore. And, of course, actually what she was saying was that I'm fixing to move out. You know what I mean? So I'm getting dressed, and I'm thinking, you know, I've got to find some way out of this, you know. Actually, it was kind of like she was my last friend I had, because I had a habit of blowing off friends pretty good whenever I drank. So she had mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous, going to AA. Now, let me tell you, this is May 18th, 1972. The only thing I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous was that, I think it was Jerry Rogers had that song about the difference between drunk and alcoholic, is us drunks don't have to attend all them dang old meetings. Well, I still didn't know anything about it. But she had mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous, and to the best of my knowledge, I only knew one alcoholic in West. And this guy had one leg shorter than the other, and he'd walk around town, and his hair would be all messed up, you know, and he'd be drunk, and usually he'd pee in his pants. And I thought, well, that's an alcoholic. I don't want to ever be one of those. So I asked my wife, I said, well, what about if I go to AA, would you stay? Well, I saw her eyes kind of light up. She said, yeah, you go to AA, I'll stay. I said, all right, I think I'll do that. Now, this is on a Thursday. Okay, she carries me to work. And, you know, when you make a decision like that, you think about it all day long, you know. And I'm thinking, she can't be serious. I'm not like that, you know. I'm not one of those kind of people, you know. And well, she picked me up that afternoon when we were leaving the parking lot. She says, you remember what you said this morning? I said, yeah, I think I do. About going to AA? She said, yeah. She said, well, I called. They got a meeting tonight. I thought, damn. The day I decided to join, they got a meeting. You know? I said, well, all right, I guess we'll go, you know. And I'm thinking, man, I hope nobody don't see my car there, you know. I don't mind them seeing me running all over town, you know. Somewhere along the line, I'd park this Volkswagen inside the White Auto store there in West, and drunker than hell, you know. I mean, when something like that happens in a small town, everybody shows up. You know, I didn't mind them thinking I was a drunk, but I didn't want them to know I was an alcoholic, you know. So we went. And it was the old Lake Waco Club at that time over on the corner of 17th and Columbus in Waco. When we walked in there, and I looked around, there's a bunch of older people about my age now, you know what I mean? And I looked around and I thought, well, you know, they're drinking coffee and laughing, talking to each other, you know, kind of in a casual manner. And I thought, well, this is nice, you know. Poor bastards can't drink, you know, I mean. So, you know, they're over here doing what they can, trying to enjoy life anyway, you know. This lady walks up to me and says, hi, I'm Joyce, I'm an alcoholic. You know, I thought to myself, damn, lady, I don't believe I'd be saying that about myself, you know. I said, my name's Ronnie and I am too, you know, which I didn't really think I was. But, you know, like I say, I didn't want to feel like she was the only one there. I checked her out, you know, and she looked like she scrubbed floors at the Riley Hotel or something like that, you know. Well, we sat there in that meeting. Of course, everybody's real friendly, and the only other thing I remember hearing during that meeting was God. And I thought, oh, hell, we're going to stay sober and pray the rest of our lives. Man, that ain't for me, you know. I'm ready to get the hell out of there. Well, you know, you ever hear this joke about this old gold miner? He was coming in from mining gold. He'd been out there mining, and boy, I tell you, his throat was dry. He'd been out there for about a month, and he came into town, and when he got up to the saloon, he was planning on getting something to drink. And whenever he walked up there, a couple of these young wranglers were out there on the front porch. And this one told this other one, said, hey, watch this. He pulled out his pistol and said, hey, old man, you know how to dance? He said, no, I don't reckon I do. He said, well, let's see if you can't learn right quick. So he started shooting at his feet, and this old man started jumping around. And they all laughed, you know, thought it was funny as hell, until that kid ran out of bullets. That old man grabbed a shotgun off that mule walk over to that kid. He said, son, he said, you ever kissed a mule on the mountain? The kid looked up at him. He said, no. He said, but I always wanted to. Well, that's kind of the way I felt in my first AA meeting. I didn't want to be there, but I didn't really feel like I had much of a choice. So we started coming. They told us after that meeting, said, you know, Ronnie, we've got another meeting here Saturday night. I thought, man, what kind of group is this? I thought they met once a month, you know, like Knights of Columbus or something. Well, I had 1,000 excuses, but like I said, I really wasn't able to do any kind of bargaining. So we came. And so I didn't drink. I got kind of listening to what they're talking about, you know, and I asked this guy, Little Joe, I don't know how you guys did it, but I asked one guy to be my sponsor, but I never talked to him. So I talked to this guy named Little Joe because I felt comfortable talking to him, you know. And so I asked him one day, now, how do you do this? You know what I mean? Are we ever going to start back drinking? He says, no, I said, we don't drink, you know, but we just do it one day at a time. And I said, well, what about tomorrow? He said, well, tomorrow we just do it one day at a time again. And I thought, well, that's a crazy way to do something. You know what I mean? And I guess it is, but it works for us. You know, another thing, a question I had was, well, you know, how long do I have to do this? I said, well, you know, one thing about alcoholism, it never gets any better. It always gets worse. I thought, well, man, ain't I in a hell of a situation? So, not knowing what else to do, you know, we started going to those meetings. There's the old Lake Waco Club. They met on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturday nights at 8 o'clock. And the first speaker meeting that I went to that Saturday was a guy named Hal Newman. And some of you may have heard of him. I know that his talk has been recorded many times. He was somewhat of a circuit speaker anyway. And he talked about going into this fourth dimension of awareness that was kind of like an out-of-body experience. And I'll tell you what, that was just enough to get me interested in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I knew I needed something really bad. See, I didn't think I was an alcoholic because I could quit. But once I started, I couldn't stop. And I really thought I was nuts. I thought I was crazy. And I was really afraid that everybody else was going to find out that I was crazy, as if they didn't already know. You know, what I know today is everybody knew I was an alcoholic long before I ever did. So, you know, they say, bring the body and the mind will follow. And so we started going to those meetings, and I kind of got to where I sort of looked forward to going to those meetings. And, you know, I'd go, and this guy, Little Joe, he kind of took me under his wing. He'd say, well, how's it going, Ron? I said, well, you know, everything's going pretty good, but, you know, this place I work at, there's a bunch of assholes. I said, I wish I could find a better job. He said, well, hang in there, you know, maybe things will get better. And so I said, well, all right, you know, I'm not going to drink, you know. So another week would go by, you know, and Little Joe, he asked me again, how's everything going? I said, well, you know, everything's going pretty good, but, you know, like I said, you know, I'm still working in the same place, you know, put up with those buttholes. Man, you know, I sure need to find another job. He said, well, look around. He said, maybe you'll find something, you know. Well, I don't know, along about the third or fourth week, I came in to the meeting that night, and he said, Ronnie, he said, how's it going? I said, well, Joe, you ain't gonna believe what happened today. He said, what's that? I said, you know all them assholes I've been telling you about that I work with? There's about 60 of them. He said, yeah. I said, they all changed today. He said, really? I said, yeah. Every one of them. I said, man, I don't know what to think of them. And he said, well, he said, trying to make you change. And I said, evidently, you know. And that was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. We started going to those meetings, and I got to where I started really liking, enjoying the meetings, you know. They talked about God, and this guy, Little Joe, told me that I could just talk to God like he was another person. You know, I went all through Catholic school and church, and I was raised up going to church. But no one ever told me that I could just talk to God like he is another person, you know. And so I started doing that just to see if it worked. And I'll be a son of a gun. After a couple of weeks, it seemed like he did start answering me. And things started getting good. You know, today, this is such a trivial thing, but I remember one night when I came into that group, and I'd bought a new set of tires for the car. You know, that's something I never did. You know, my drinking always kept me in debt. I was always behind. And these people thought that was great, you know. That I bought a new set of tires. Things like that I was able to share with that group. I was 21 years old at the time. And, you know, as this lady that I told you I thought scrubbed floors at the Riley Hotel, she lived in this big mansion over on the lake. And she would have parties over there. A lady named Joyce Bredwick. I'm not sure if she's still alive now today or not, but she may be. She moved to California later on. But you know, that told me right there, you know, what I see and know is what's there. In fact, there was a guy who told me the other day, this insurance guy, he don't know nothing about AA. He told me, he said, you know, he said, we're talking about believing so-and-so, what they said, you know, and he said, you know, sometimes I don't even believe what I said. And I thought to myself, well, you know, he didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I understand what he's saying, you know. Sometimes I don't even believe what I say, you know. But I tell you, we went to Alcoholics Anonymous for 2 years, and I kind of fell short on my program. You know, I'd go to the meetings. But, you know, I figured the 12 steps were kind of like the 10 commandments. You know, I mean, I went all through Catholic school for 8 years. And you know, we have the 10 commandments. And, you know, about three of those was enough for me. You know what I mean? So when I saw those 12 steps, you know, I thought, well, you know, 1, 2, 3, and we'll skip that 4 and 5, you know, and 6, I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I can probably do that, you know. But, you know, if you got an incomplete program, when things get bad, when the chips are down, you might very well end up getting drunk, you know. You know, the big book talks about how every alcoholic has this idea in the back of his head that his long period of sobriety will enable him to go out and drink again as normal person. And I'm not sure if it says every alcoholic, but many of us do. And you know, I thought after 2 years of sobriety, maybe I can drink. You know? I mean, we ended up getting a divorce anyway. And I figured I needed a change of scenery. I started driving a truck. I quit going to meetings. And one night, when I was on leave, you know, with a bunch of my old buddies, I'd sort of go ahead and start back drinking, you know. And, you know, that first night, hey, A-okay, you know. I drank about 3 beers that first night, you know. And I thought, hey, I can drink, you know. Second night, I thought, well, you know, if you can drink 3, you might as well at least double that, you know. I mean, hell, I think I drank 7, you know. And did pretty good. Third night, it was, you know, same old thing. Get drunker in hell. Blackout. Raise hell. Pick fights. You know, whatever, you know. If you really want to know what I did when I drank, you really have to ask some of the people that were around me. Because so much of it, I don't remember. I thought, well, I guess I'm going to have to go back to AA. So I did. I went back, got a Desire chip. Didn't drink that day. Next day, started back drinking again. I thought, isn't that strange? It didn't work this time. So I thought, well, I'm going to go back, and I guess I'll just have to go back and get another Desire chip. But, you know, while I'm drinking, I might as well go ahead and drink for a while. So I did. And when things got bad, I went back and got another Desire chip and stayed sober 2 or 3 days, and then I'd start back drinking again. I thought, damn, it ain't working this time. You know, I wonder what the problem is. Well, I drank for a while, and like I say, I did that a whole lot of times. I'd get a Desire chip. When I'd reach that point where I absolutely had to do something about my drinking, I'd get a Desire chip, stay sober 2 or 3 days, and then I'd start back. But one thing I'd do, I'd always get around my old friends after a few days. I think the Big Book talks about after a few days, the alcoholic can't remember the situation he was in just a few days ago. And that is so true. And that happened to me over and over and over. And one day I was coming home from work, and I felt like hell. Really felt bad. This is on a Monday. And I was raised up to where you always went to work, you know, regardless of how bad you felt. I never had hangovers. I don't know about everybody else. But I was usually still drunk in the morning, so it wasn't that hard to go to work, you know. But that day, I was exhausted. And so anyway, after I got off work, I thought, man, I've been telling myself all day, man, when I get finished, when I get off work today, I'm going home, going to sleep, because I'm tired, you know, I'm wore out. Well, on the way home, I thought, well, you know, being tired as you ought to be able to stop and just drink 3 beers. You know, that's been my goal all my life, to just drink 3 beers, you know. And so I thought, well, all right, I'll do that, you know. So I stopped at that bar that I always went to. Walked in, feeling timid, feeling shy, afraid. That's the way I felt when I was sober. Didn't want to really talk to anybody. Sit down at the bar, ordered a beer. I looked across that guy across the bar in the mirror, and I thought, man, you sure do look bad. And I thought, well, hell, you know, I feel bad. And so I drank that beer, ordered another one. And I tell you, by the time I drank 3 beers, I looked back over at that guy in the mirror, and I thought, you know what? I think you're starting to look a little better. And I thought, hey, you know, I'm starting to feel better. And I did the same thing that I did every time before. I stayed till closing time. You know, that was a moment of clarity for me. That helped me understand what happens whenever I drink. It's almost like getting a brain transplant. You know, I'm a totally different person, sober, than I am when I'm drinking. When I drank, I didn't have any really good friends. We talk about, Cole knows a good friend of mine, Joe, that I grew up with, and he and I were really good friends. I mean, we grew up on the same block, played baseball together, football together. But, you know, whenever my drinking got to that alcoholism state, you know, he didn't want to have anything to do with me. And I can understand why, you know. My friends were the ones that drank like I drank, and I didn't really have a whole care to have a lot to do with them either. But, you know, nobody wants to drink alone. So anyway, I don't know how long it was after that, but one night, it was New Year's Eve 1975, fixing to be 1976, I had one of those spiritual awakenings. Some of you may have had a spiritual awakening like this. On the way home from the bar, the P&L Casino over on the old Dallas Highway. Yeah, one thing I like about drinking over there on the county line is if you're a real alcoholic, you fit right in with them people now. But even I get thrown out of there. They threw me out that night for pulling a knife on a guy. I'm glad he didn't slap me because he'd have kicked my butt. I always got beat up when I fought. And I only fought when I was drinking. But I had one of those spiritual awakenings. You know, when you roll your car on the way home, you wake up the next day and you think, oh man, I really got to do something here. You know, things are getting bad. And what made it worse was I could still drive the car, you know. At least if I couldn't drive it, I could talk my dad and help me get another one, you know. So, here I go back to AA. And it was kind of crazy because for some reason or another, this was on a Monday, and for some reason or another, I couldn't find anyone to really talk to. So I hung around that day. I thought maybe if I can hang around until... It seemed like Triangle had an afternoon meeting then at 5:30. Well, I talked to this one lady. She said that Central AA Foundation, it's a place over on the corner of 17th and Lyle. It's a house for alcoholic men to live in. I'd already tried to get in the Freeman house, and they wanted me to pay. You know. So I didn't really have a lot of money. And so she said, this lady named Jerry, Tall Jerry, some of you, Cole probably remembers her. She said, why don't you go over there and tell them what your situation is? She said, but you got to have 30 days sobriety to get in. So I went over there and talked to him. This guy named Charlie Brown answered the door. He was a housekeeper at that time. He said, how long have you been sober? I said, 30 days. Yeah. You know, we learn to tell them what they want to hear. You know what I mean? And he said, well, let me talk to the board and see what they say. He said, we have an opening and you can move in. I said, fantastic, man. I think maybe if I live in an AA club, I can stay sober. And this is what my problem is, this damn town that I live in, you know. I can't stay sober in this town. Well, it was a couple of days later, they had a board meeting. I talked to them, they said, yeah, move in. I said, hallelujah. You know, I got it made now. I'm going to stay sober. And you know I did. I started doing the regular thing, going to meetings. Got me a big book. You know, they said, steal one if you can't afford one. So, hell, I stole one, you know. Everything seemed to be going pretty good. There was five of us guys living at the house then. One guy named Boyd. Some of you may remember old boy. Another guy named O.L. Charlie Brown ran the house. These guys were, they were an inspiration to me. A guy named Jesse Goss, he was one of the board members of the foundation there. The guy that ran the Freeman, it was the Freeman House at that time. He was the director of the Freeman House for many years. A guy named Al Porter, Dale Lovell. These are some of the AA giants, you know, from back then. And they met there every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 o'clock. And like I say, I started staying sober. And after being sober about 3 months, I remember sitting on the front porch thinking, you know, this sobriety is great, but, you know, sometimes it really gets boring as hell, you know. And I was really bored that day, but I thought, well, you know, my sister's getting married, and I'm going to be in the wedding, and it's going to be a great opportunity for me to go back to my hometown and show them what I'm like sober, you know. So, sure enough, went down there to the wedding, and this one in big wedding starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. And my brother-in-law gives everybody a half pint for being in the wedding. So I got my half pint right there, you know. You know, that's like having power, you know what I mean? I thought, somebody's going to say, hey, Ron, aren't you going to have a drink with us? Everybody's tapping on their half pint before the wedding. And I'm going to say, no, you know, I'm going to AA. Everything's great. Life's beautiful. I'm staying sober today. Trying to make a new life for myself. Well, you know, these people knew me. And like I say, these are some of the people that knew I had a drinking problem long before I ever did. And they didn't ask me to have a drink with them. And I thought, well, the hell with it. I think I'll just have a drink anyway. And so I remember popping the cap on that half pint, taking a good shot of it. I remember the sensation of the alcohol. And I remember thinking, this don't feel as good as I thought it was going to feel. And so I drank a little bit more, a little more, and still that same feeling. And I could feel it going through my body. You know, I could feel that warm sensation. But it just didn't feel as good as I thought it was going to feel. And I believe today, the reason for that is whenever we're sober, we feel a lot better than we're aware of compared to when we were drinking. But that didn't stop me. I continued to drink. And like I said, that wedding started 10 o'clock in the morning, and then they had a big dinner that afternoon, which I didn't eat. I never did eat when I drank. And a big dance that night, and by the time the sun went down, I was in a blackout, and I don't know how many fights and arguments and confrontations I got into that night, but that next morning I could tell that I'd mopped that dance floor with that tuxedo that night, you know. And I woke up that morning not having any idea what happened that night at my parents' house. And my mother opens the door of the bedroom where I'm sleeping. She says, Ronnie, there's a detective wants to talk to you on the phone. I said, oh, hell, a detective? I said, tell him I'm not here. You know, that's the last thing I needed to hear that morning, was that a detective wanted to talk to me on the phone. And that morning I thought, oh my God, you know, here it is, starting all over again. You know, the big book talks about those hideous four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. And I thought, God, I don't want to ever have to feel this way again. That is the awfulest feeling that I've ever felt in my life. I believe that morning, the fear of living had finally become worse than the fear of down. And so I got dressed and got the hell out of there. My mother said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Man, I gotta get back to Waco. I can't stay sober in this town." And so I got the hell out of there. And you know, the thought crossed my mind, you know, I would love to just be bored today. All of a sudden, I wasn't bored anymore, you know. I went to that club there at Central, and this is on a Sunday morning, and I went down there in that meeting room, and I was the only one there, and I got on my knees, and I said, "God, whoever you are, whatever you are, I'm not sure if I know, but if you'll just show me how to stay sober one day at a time, I'll work all 12 of the steps, I'll read the big book, I'll go to meetings, I'll help others, whatever you want me to do, I can't live like this anymore." And you know, the thought crossed my mind about if I could just have another 90 days sobriety, that'd be good enough. You know, I would settle for 90 days sobriety. And I know today what God's answer was to that, and that was, "You know, Ronnie, I can't give you 90 days. All I can give you is today, one day at a time." And that's what it's been with me today. That was April 25th, 1976. And it's still a very personal thing for me, even though I don't feel like I've been sober any longer than anyone else. You know, I'm just one day away from a drunk, same as all of us. You know, if I drink today, you know, I'm starting over tomorrow, if I get back. I really don't believe that I would ever sober up again. For one thing, you know, I done found out there's pills you can take, you know. You know, my drinking, the kind of stuff that I did as far as drugs, didn't really keep me sober, you know. But I remember that day still. You know, I really remember feeling like hell, you know. But I was determined to stay sober that day. I called up a friend of mine, Little Mike. You know, do y'all have a Little Mike in around here? You know, it seems like every place there's a Little Mike. We have one at Triangle now, a guy named Little Mike. But anyway, there was a guy named Little Mike. He passed on now. But he came over, stayed with me that day. And we went out and walked. He said walking was good, you know. Walking and sweating and, you know, read the 24-hour day book, read the big book. Well, one thing I knew was that if I stayed sober, tomorrow was going to be a little bit better. And regardless of how screwed up my life was then, that night when I went to bed, I knew that I had one positive thing in my favor, and that was that I'd been sober that day. And the next day was pretty much the same thing. And I tell you what I did. At that time, there was a little group getting started. And at that time, it didn't even have a name. It was a little group that met in the back of a MHMR center. And there was a guy named Billy Joe that was land riding this place. Now, Billy Joe, he was a five-time loser, you know. And I started going to those little meetings that they had there. And this was a real little AA club. And if you went, it started out real small, but man, it started just growing and growing, you know. And you got to where, if you went, you would have to sit elbow to elbow with everybody. And uh, finally, one night, they decided to give it a name. You know, we're going to name this club, you know. Well, everybody threw in their suggestions, you know, and I thought, Speakeasy. You know, I thought, man, that would be a good name for this AA club. You know, I didn't know that, you know, some people call bars speakeasies, but, well, Billy Joe, he overruled my suggestion. He didn't think that was a really good idea. He wanted to name it the Serenity Group, he said, because this, we have a lot of serenity here. We have all kinds, you know, we have people with money that come over here. We have doctors, attorneys, and we got the Skid Row bums. We have ex-cons, you know. So anyway, of course, this idea won out. We named it the Serenity Group. Well, I became a member of that group. And whenever the doors were open, I was there. And I got me a sponsor in the meantime. You know, no one ever told me that I could only have one sponsor, so I got me three sponsors. One was Billy Joe. He was one of my sponsors. And a guy named Tim Tapes. You know, these guys are dead now. Tim was one of my sponsors. Now, I'm going to tell you, the advantage of having Tim for a sponsor is he slept during the day and was awake all night. So, hey, if you need to talk to somebody at 3 o'clock in the morning, you don't even have to wake him up. He's there, you know. Plus, he's a mechanic. He liked to fiddle. So his garage was open 24 hours a day, but, you know, if you go there during the day, he's going to be asleep. And then my old buddy named Stan House, was my other sponsor. And I used to drink with him. We used to drink on the old Dallas Highway. One thing about drinking on the old Dallas Highway is there was never a dull moment over there. Always something going on. Every now and then somebody decided to park their motorcycle inside the bar, you know. And that was cool, you know. And, of course, the girls were like that, too. So thank God, because, you know, no decent woman would have anything to do with me at that time. But we had a beautiful little group. And I started working those steps. And I'll tell you what, a lot of you don't remember the 16-page inventory. And I don't know where that ever came from, but that was the form of a fourth step that was going around at that time, you know. And it was more of a psychoanalysis, I guess, than anything else. But, you know, one thing I know today is that if I work those 12 steps to the best of my ability, I'll stay sober. And I've been sober ever since. And, you know, I say that's a tremendous miracle. And God deserves all the credit for that, because there's no way anybody that knows me, I'm not that sharp of a person to be one that could stay sober 33 years without God's grace and God's help. And I've had a good laugh. You know, when I got to this program, I thought I was dumb and I thought I was ugly. Well, I'm not that good looking, but it really doesn't bother me today. You know what I mean? Now, I'm not that dumb, but, you know, of course, I'm not the dumbest person in the world, thank God. I've had a great life in AA. You know, I've been married and divorced three times since I've been in AA. And Katie is my fourth wife, and I'm her fifth husband. And they say that, and we've been married 21 years. But, thank you. We met in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, they say that 70% of all marriages end up in divorce, and so I figure we've got about a 15% chance of staying married, you know. So, actually, I think it's more than that. I forgot how I figured that. But we have a good life today. You know, I'll tell you, I believe it's very important to have a home group. I believe it's very important to be one of those people that whenever you walk in there, and those other AA friends look at you, that they know that something's going on in your life that's got you screwed up. You know, after I was sober 2.5 years, like I say, you know, I'd made a determination when I was a kid that I wanted to be one of these people that got married a lot of times, you know. I don't know why, you know. My parents were only married one time, and, you know, I always thought that was kind of a drag, you know. Isn't it crazy? You know, it's such insane thinking. So, anyway, it wasn't long. You know, anybody that said no relationships in the first year, I do not want that person for a sponsor. You know what I mean? That ain't gonna work for me. But anyway, I got married not long after I was sober and stayed sober a couple of years, and then my wife started hitting it off with my spiritual advisor, a guy named Galen. Some of you know Galen. He's dead now, you know. Boy, I tell you what, that blew my mind now. I went to my AA group, you know, just really feeling bad. Told them about what was going on in my life, you know. And my old buddy, Ed Scott, he said, I always wonder what you saw in you to start with. I thought, well, that kind of made me feel a little better, you know. Someone else said, those wives are easy to find, he said, but, you know, them damn houses are getting more and more expensive all the time. I thought, yeah, I know that's right. But, you know, worst of all, I had this tremendous resentment inside of me. I wasn't just hurt. Actually, the week before, I was telling my sponsor, Billy Joe, that, you know, I wish there was some way I could get out of this marriage because, you know, I'm tired of being married, you know. And, you know, be careful what you ask for, you know. It happened. All of a sudden, I didn't really feel that way. But I had this tremendous resentment. And I wanted to kick this guy's butt, but Gabe was kind of a frail person. I'm afraid I'd kill him, you know. And the last thing I wanted to do is end up in prison, you know. And I talked to my sponsor, Billy Joe. He said, "This too shall pass." And I said, "Well, I know that's right." You know, one thing about it, I didn't really ever think about drinking. And I think the reason for that was because, you know, I never drank because times were bad. I didn't drink because times were good. I didn't drink because of pressure. You know, I just drank because I like to drink, and I like to drink every day, regardless of what was going on. And plus, I had been working those 12 steps. You know, somewhere in the 12 and 12, I think it's in the step 4, the last part of step, or it might be the first part of step 6. I think it's step 6. It says, when we became entirely ready to clean that house and turn our lives over to the care of a power greater than ourselves, we find that the drinking obsession vanished. Something like that, you know. I hate to quote anything out of the book because it's, I always say it wrong. But thank God I knew drinking was not going to be a solution. And I knew kicking his butt wasn't going to be a solution. And so I just did it one day at a time. And I worked with my sponsors. I went to AA meetings. You know, I want to tell you one big advantage we had back then was we had a non-medical detox. And by then, Billy Joe was running the detox. And I would go over there practically every day and talk to him, and there would be these guys over there that are detoxing, and they're detoxing on orange juice and honey, and they're shaking like hell and sweating and toughing it out. And we had meetings there too. And, you know, that's something that you don't get to see nowadays. Back then, people didn't go to the treatment centers all the time. And I didn't know you could take any kind of medication to ease off the alcohol. But I'm grateful today that I did it the way I did it. And going to that detox was a great experience for me, seeing those guys sober up. And just like anything, you know, after a period of time, I got over it, you know, no big deal. One night after a meeting at the old Lake Brazos Club, that was incidentally Johnny G's group, the one that Johnny G started up. You know, I have so many great memories of in AA history. You know, I saw Johnny G when he made his first meeting. If you ever go to Central, they have a picture of him there. Johnny G was a black guy when he went to the Lake Waco Club. And I remember when he went to his first meeting. And I remember him sitting back there, and I looked back there, and I saw him and that old black forehead shining back there in that room, and had that black fro, and I thought, you know, that poor black son of a gun ain't got a chance. Not here with all these white people. And I'll be a son of a gun. I'm the one that ended up going out and drinking, you know. And whenever I came back in, he looked like he had a halo around his head. I guess he did, you know, because I wasn't hallucinating. You know, he always looked like he had a halo around his head. But anyway, after one of the meetings over there at the old Lake Brazos Club in East Waco, you know, I thought after the meeting, I thought, you know what, I'm ready to get rid of this resentment. And I tell you, I had this vision, and it was like this big giant boulder in the middle of this freshwater stream. And, you know, it was really blocking that stream. It was screwing everything up. And whenever I decided to let go of that resentment, you know, that stream was flowing again like it was supposed to be. And that's kind of the way it was with me. You know, I just started feeling better about the whole deal. It wasn't probably that weekend. There was a Wembley conference coming up. You know, one really neat thing about AA back then was that they had a lot of young people's conferences. You get together about every 3 months and go to either Lake Whitney or Wembley or someplace. And young people from all over the state would get together and just have a blast. Just have a big blowout from Friday on through Sunday. And whenever we got there to that Wembley conference, Galen was there. And I knew that I needed to talk to Galen. I had to get rid of this resentment and let him know. And so I did, you know. And we became friends again. We were friends up until he died, which was probably about a year ago now, maybe 2 years. I love Galen. He lived out of Whitney. Plus, you know, the fact that a good spiritual advisor is hard to find. You know what I mean? Galen was a spiritual advisor. Since then and now, I guess we're fixing to wind up. What time is it anyway? I can really get carried away with this AA. I've had so many good things. What time is it?
10 after.
Oh, son of a gun. Excuse me. Well, since then, Katie and I met in an AA club over there at Central. Actually, we met over there at the Serenity Group. She introduced herself as Ronnie, and you know, when I saw those big, beautiful blue eyes and that red hair, you know, I had to talk to her. So I did, and after a couple of weeks, I asked her if she'd like to go out. She said, yeah. So she said, I'll meet you here at the club. I thought, well, all right. So So we met at the old Serenity Club Saturday night. And after that, we left, and I said, well, what would you like to do? I thought maybe we'd go maybe to the Melody Ranch and dance or something, you know, something romantic. She said, well, I thought we'd go down to Indian Springs Park and listen to some AA tapes. I thought, well, I guess that'll work. You know, that's not exactly what I had in mind, but, but that's what we did. But that was the beginning of just a tremendous relationship that we have today. You know, she's been such an inspiration to me. At that time, I'd been sober 12 years or 11 years. And she asked me whenever we got down there, she said, I need to ask you what your motives are. My sponsor tells me to check your motives. What are your motives? And, you know, I did like I always did, you know, tell people what I need to hear. I said, well, you know, you're a pretty girl, you know, you're attractive, and I'd like to spend some time with you. She said, what are your motives? She said, well, you've been sober 11 years, and that's what I want. And if you're going to spend time with me, you're going to have to eat, sleep, drink, and breathe AA, because that's what I have to do to stay sober. I said, well, all right, you know, that sounds good to me, you know. I like the AA program. Well, I tell you what, I had no idea how serious she was about this. I mean, we started going to meetings. Sometimes we would go to 5 meetings a day. I finally told her one day, I said, I'll tell you what, bud, I think I'm going to skip that meeting because, you know, people are going to think I done had a slip or something. They see me going to this meeting. <You know? laughs> We hung around 2 years just kind of make sure it was going to work and got married, you know. We got married April 7th, 1988. And we've been married ever since. And we have a fantastic relationship. You know, I always like to bar hop. Today, I'm meeting hop. And we do it together. We go to AA meetings all over, wherever we are. And that's the really neat thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is wherever you are, you can walk in and you know a whole lot about those people whenever you get there, you know. And we have something in common. I think the big book says that we're like the survivors from a sinking ship. But it's not our just surviving that bounds us together, but it's our recovery program. That's not what it says, but that's kind of what it says, you know. So anyway, we have a beautiful life today. You know, since then and now, boy, I tell you, July 7th, July 14th, 2006, actually starting 2004, I started getting really sick. I didn't know what the problem was. Actually, it started before that. I got to where I could eat anything I wanted to, and I wouldn't gain any weight. And I thought, hey, well, I kind of like this, you know. Well, you know, I started losing more weight, you know. And I ended up in the hospital and found out that I had cirrhosis of the liver and hepatitis C and diabetes and a severe liver damage. And they said they wanted to put me on the liver transplant list. And, you know, prerequisite to that is to have stopped drinking, you know, and I had, you know. And where I got the hepatitis, I don't really know. And they said that it's something that can hang with you for possibly 30 years. And so, you know, I was convinced that it would never happen to me. The doctor wanted to put me on the liver transplant list. And, you know, that's the last thing in the world that I wanted. I've never been operated on, especially by a professional, you know what I mean. And July 14th, July 17th, 2006, I was still at work. I'm a mechanic by trade, and I was on light duty, and I got a phone call, and this lady says, "Mr. Pushowski." I said, "Yeah." She said, "This is so-and-so at Baylor Medical Center." She said, we have a liver for you. Isn't that great? And I thought, no, not really. She says, "Can you be here in 2 hours? And I thought, is this something we can do tomorrow? I'm really not up for this today. But, they never once asked me if I wanted a liver transplant. They just signed me up. Of course, they made sure I have a good insurance. And, my luck, I did, And so I went home and we headed to Dallas. And I had no idea what was fixing to take place. I had heard all kinds of horror stories. And I remember when I went into that operating room, it smelled like a meat market inside there. And everything was made out of aluminum. And I saw something on this table in a bowl next to me, and I said, jokingly, I said, "Is that my liver?" And he said, "Yeah, that's it." And I thought, man. And he said, "Now, in a little while, you're going to start getting sleepy, You're going to start feeling sleepy." And I did the only thing I knew to do. I said, "God, today I turn my will and my life over to your care." And that's the last thing I remember until between 6 and 8 hours later, I woke up with a new liver. With, they had at least 2 hoses stuck in every hole of my body. And, man, what an experience. Thank God I was sober. It's been 3 years now, almost 3 years. And I have a good life. Katie and I, we still do. We have 6 beautiful grandchildren that have never seen us drunk. I'm so grateful for that. We have kids that, they're working out their own method of, they're still working on their testimonies, their stories. We're both Christians today. Jesus is my Lord and Savior. And we just really enjoy life today. God bless us with a beautiful, modest home in West. But it's so much more than anything I ever thought I would have. Hey, I'm on disability today. So I couldn't go back to my old job. But I feel pretty good, And so now I'm able to do some of the things that I always wanted to do, which is a lot of volunteer stuff. I volunteer with Mission Waco, who sponsors Church Under the Bridge, who, incidentally, People Magazine is going to be there tomorrow morning. So we have people from all over come to the Church Under the Bridge. If you ever get a chance, come on out. We start out, I chair the Celebrate Recovery group, which starts at 9:45 in the morning. And we do it with, we use the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book. And we also use Bible scripture in that group. I volunteer at the Manor House, which is a part of Mission Waco, which is like a halfway house for men that need a good, clean, sober environment to sober up in, to live in for a while. The really neat thing about this is there's a lot of people praying for these guys, and I see them come in, and right at first, a lot of them don't want to be there because probation sent them. But after they're there for a while, I see their eyes start to light up. I see them start to get this thing called sobriety. I see them start to begin to get hope, you know, that there is a better way for them. We have our West group, you know, I'm the treasurer and the steering committee and I'm not sure what else for that club, but we're getting bigger, you know. I told them the other night maybe we'll have a steering committee meeting one of these days, you know. They weren't quite ready for it, but anyway. We have a blast. We have a good time. I enjoy doing these volunteer things. I do the Meals on Wheels, but I only do it one day a week. You know, I don't want to get too mixed in with these old people. You know what I mean? I'm starting to look old as hell as it is. You know what I mean? So, anyway, I have a good life today. I thank God for it. I appreciate y'all asking me to come out and share with you guys. This is really a beautiful meeting you have here. Especially after the sun goes down, it kind of cools off a little. So anyway, once again, thank you very much. I love every one of you. You're part of my family. Thanks.